arrived in Paris on the next leg of our world tour. I left the last podcast with Danny Heng early because I realised my plane was leaving. And Brian has only just arrived now. I've had a wonderful day in Paris on our virtual world tour. And we're very honoured to be joined by Bernard Escudier from the Institut Gustave Roussy, who's been involved in the development of pretty much all of the drugs and needs no introduction. Bernard, so far on the world tour, we started in Vancouver and we had seafood. Two nights ago, we had Italian in Calgary and a walk through the mountains. What would we do in Paris this evening?
So probably tonight I will go to the Eiffel Tower and go to the top of the Eiffel Tower. If you want to join us for dinner, that's going to be nice because it's outside.
It sounds lovely, Bernard. Sounds lovely. Brian, what do you think?
Yeah, that's great. Never been.
Never been. We're totally up for it.
Yeah, you can.
Bernard, can I start with the first question? Tivozanib is a drug which has not been universally approved or accepted in the community. Why is that?
So the reason why is because probably the first trial has been a little badly designed in how we handled the first trial. And that's something which is interesting because that's probably one of our best TKI we have actually. But because of the initial trial, about is there any impaired survival with this drug based on something that we could not understand here. But from my experience and my first analysis of this drug, that's probably one of the best and most selective TKI we have in
the audience. Yeah, so TiVo-1, for maybe the audience that doesn't know, was a frontline trial of TiVo versus sorafenib and had PFS advantages, but OS sort of trending the wrong way because of, in essence, one-way crossover. So the sorafenib arm got two drugs, sorafenib then TiVo, and the TiVo arm got one. And it was a good demonstration of that multiple TKIs extend survival, you know, more than one TKI, but not quite what the design of the trial was. So it was not approved in the US. But then what I was going to ask is, it was later approved in Europe, and maybe talk about the approval as much as you can and how it's currently being used there.
So it has been approved in Europe. When we analyzed the TiVo-1 trial, we looked at the reason why there was this bad signal in overall survival. And the reason was clear. I mean, there was a big crossover in the sorafenib arm to tivozanib. And that's probably the main reason why it was this bad signal. So it was approved in Europe, and now it's used in many countries where it's reimbursed as one of our best TKI, and that's widely used in UK and in
and
Italy.
It was approved a couple years ago. What was that year? I forgot. Drug. 2 years. Okay.
So it was approved 2 years ago, and then we almost depending.
And is it being used frontline or second line, or where exactly is it getting used? Do you know?
Oh, it's. Okay. It's mostly used frontline.
Bernard, one of the criticisms has always been that it's always gone against sorafenib and not a benchmark like sunitinib. So cabozantinib in CABOSUN showed a PFS advantage over sunitinib. And of course, is widely used and many people feel is the most active targeted therapy. And then, of course, pazopanib showed non-inferiority against sunitinib. And for that reason, that was widely approved. This drug's always gone against sorafenib, which no one really tests or uses very much anymore. Why was the sorafenib chosen, and is that a problem?
Yeah, it has been initially a problem. I think the reason it was chosen was probably because it was considered as easier to beat. And if you remember well, I mean, axitinib was also tested against sorafenib a long time ago in a large phase 3, which turned out to be negative also, which just means that probably sorafenib is not a very bad TKI. It's not the best we have, but it's not a bad TKI. And that was the choice. I would have preferred to test it against sunitinib.
And you would be happy using tivozanib instead of sunitinib frontline if you would be. Okay, great. The sure. next piece of the story then comes on to TiVo 2, because TiVo 2, we have a TiVo 3. What happened to TiVo 2? What was that?
So I don't know what was exactly TiVo 2. So after TiVo 1, there was several trials which were launched. One interesting one was called Taurus. So I designed at that time with Aveo a preference study with TiVo versus sunitinib in the same way we did with pazopanib, but it was stopped because of the company decision. And the TiVo 2 was probably a large phase 2. I don't know exactly
what. Well, I only know because Tom told me right before this podcast.
It's probably like Ghostbusters 2 that no one ever talks about anymore. It's not a great film, but there was The Empire Strikes Back, which is one of the great trilogies.
And Rocky 2.
There are some good sequels. But there are very few good third films, Brian. It's fair to say there are very few good third films.
Maybe a separate podcast.
Tell me
that.
About TiVo 3. Tell me about TiVo 3.
So TiVo 3, when the drug was approved in Europe, the U.S. tried to get approval in the U.S. And they went to FDA, and FDA said, okay, show us a trial where you can demonstrate that there is no impaired effect on the overall survival. And that's the reason why we designed TiVo 3. And the market was at that time, do we need a TKI as a rescue therapy in second or third line? That was at the end the reason to launch TiVo 3. And at that time, in this setting of second or third line, probably sorafenib is an acceptable choice.
And sorafenib was also chosen because that was the TiVo 1 design. So, you know, again, it was to prove that TiVo 1 was indeed from one-way crossover and not anything inherent to the drug itself. So again, not a perfect comparator, but a very practical one. And as Bernard said, it was put into that third and fourth line setting just because the landscape had totally changed since TiVo 1, obviously, with IO based combos up front.
And no a PFS advantage, but no survival advantage a second time.
Correct. Yep. PFS advantage, response rate advantage. Interestingly, some really durable responses, which still surprises me. I'm not sure that I understand, you know, more than I would have expected from just single agent TKI. And importantly, no survival decrement. I mean, that was the real issue. I don't know that a survival advantage was expected. I don't think any TKI versus TKI in a large scale has shown that, but no survival decrement. I think that was what the study was set out to accomplish, honestly.
So Bernard, you've been around the block a few times. You know a little bit about these drugs. We're in an environment now where if you give ipi-nivo or axi-pembro frontline, we have now a series of choices and we have very little robust data to point us in the right direction. You could choose cabozantinib, you could choose sunitinib, you could choose pazopanib, you could choose tivozanib. Which VEGF TKI are you choosing for patients who fail, sort of patients who fail, cancers that progress after ipi-nivo or axi-pembro?
So I think if you look at the data we have, including TiVo 3 data, I think TiVo is probably a good choice in patients with good and intermediate risk. Both from TiVo 1 and TiVo 3, I think the poorest patients are probably not the best candidate for tivozanib. So when you look at patients who fail ipi-nivo, I think we should use a TKI. I personally prefer to use a more selective TKI and keep cabozantinib as third line choice in most of my patients. So I would say I usually use axitinib as my best choice in the second line setting after ipi-nivo. I think TiVo is a good alternative to axitinib. That's probably very comparable activity to axitinib in this setting. And that would be one of the situation, I would probably select tivozanib as a good choice.
Tell me about lavatinib and pembrolizumab.
Can I interrupt for a second?
Yeah, come on,
interrupt. I'll interrupt you for a change.
Yeah, that's unusual. It's very unusual.
So I wanted to pick up on two things Bernard said. One is the role of the IMDC in this setting, having just come from Calgary. So it's pretty clear if you look at the forest plots, not to overinterpret them, that the more selective TKIs have greater activity and favorable risk, say, versus poor. And I think the hypothesis is that those are, as we talked about last time, are much more VEGF driven. So a selective TKI is likely to do better there. Whereas you accumulate risk factors, you probably accumulate other biology that's driving the tumor. And so maybe a less selective TKI like sorafenib or like cabozantinib would do better there. I don't know that we have hard proof of that, but I think the clinical data supports it. And then the other point, and I agree with Bernard, I tend to use axi after ipi-nivo, but I do use cabo after axi-pembro, is that when we're moving to TKI in the salvage setting, we're not really curing patients. So to me, tolerability takes on a huge role there, which is why I think the more selective TKIs, which is why I prefer them.
And why are you guys not using sunitinib in as first line TKI therapy? So you fail ipi-nivo, why not just go back to what we were doing before and just start with sunitinib? You've jumped to axitinib, which historically has been more of a second line drug. Why are we doing that?
So I just do think that both axitinib and tivozanib are very active post cytokine, and by similarity, I would say it's probably more active than sunitinib in the post immunotherapy setting. So I do prefer these drugs, which have very good activity in after immunotherapy, if you consider cytokines to be immunotherapy. Yeah. So that's why I do prefer to use axitinib, and now probably itibozanib.
Yeah, I agree. Tolerability is the biggest reason.
Let's move on to lenvatinib plus everolimus, which seems to be, have got a lot of traction. It's been approved by the EMA of a randomized phase 2 trial. How do you feel about that, Bernard, that lenvatinib everolimus data and the approval? Is it a drug that you've used? It's not something you've mentioned so far.
So we don't use it in France, one of the reasons being that it's not reimbursed in France. And that's not considered as a reimbursed drug in France because the data so far are not convincing the health authority in France. I mean, randomized phase 2 has not been considered as good enough to France authority. It's probably a very active combination. It's also a very toxic one, and I would again consider as a choice after using axi or tivo, but not before them. So I would put them as a rescue therapy.
And so actually you're using cabozantinib third line essentially for most of your patients, except, yeah.
Most of them, except, I would say, except patients with very rapid progressive disease, poor risk disease, where I think we probably have only one chance of TKI. And then I would
the axi-pembro patients, are you using cabo on those like Brian, or are you going back to tivozanib?
I think at that point, I would use cabo. I think we need to get some data about tivo post-pembro axi. I don't know what's going to happen. I think we need to produce some of this data. But at this point of view, at this point of time, I would use
Brian, cabo. Two questions for you. Number one is, what's the role of LAVAT plus everolimus in the US at your institution? And then number two, I'd like you to think about re-challenging with immune checkpoint inhibitors. Is it something you've ever done? Does it have a role?
So I've not really used lenvatinib everolimus for the same reason Bernard cites, is that I'm not overly convinced from the randomized phase 2. And I think it's really toxic. And as I mentioned, as I move towards salvage and I'm not curing patients, then tolerability is everything. I'll be interested to see the clear study with the lenev arm and see how it performs, albeit in a different setting. But I'm kind of waiting for that to get more full data to know how to incorporate it. Although, as he said, it's clearly active, right? You know, anecdotally, very active in chromophobes. I think it'll have a role. I'm just not sure where. So I don't personally use a lot of it or any of it. I think some folks at my institution do, and I think it certainly has used sort of in pockets around the U.S. Your second question was IO after IO.
Yes.
Well, we're starting to see data, right? The sequential data presented at ESMO and ASCO. We just published about salvage ipi-nivo after prior IO. We saw at ASCO lenpembro after prior IO, and there's activity. I would call it a bit sporadic.
Yeah,
we don't have randomized data yet.
What I'm interested in is those individuals who've had ipi-nivo or axi-pembro and have progressed. Is there any role if you've had the standard frontline for any subsequent immune therapy?
I would say there's no proven role, but that there's some, you know, case series anecdotal data that patients can respond and potentially durably to a second IO agent. But it's an area we desperately need randomized trials. So I've done it. I've done salvage ipi-nivo, you know, but it's been more of a desperation third, fourth line move in a patient who's had multiple TKIs, still very young and healthy, and kind of a Hail Mary of sorts. Mostly doesn't work. The PD rate in our report was 60%, but 20% responded, including some durable. So again, it's sort of at the anecdotal stage at this point.
And Bernard, does Tivoznib have a future? And what does that future look like?
So I would say it has a future if the medical team is able to convince people. The question is, I mean, we have different TKI and we cannot use all the TKI we have. So I think it's an axitinib-like drug. So it's a good drug, but we also have axitinib, we have over TKI. So the question now is, why are we going to use TiVo? And there are many reasons why we could. One is the price of the drug, which is cheaper than most of them, the drug we use so far. Second, the tolerability is very good. So I think it's an option. I don't know who is going to use it. It's probably going to depend also on marketing and so on. But that's a good drug. It's a good drug.
Brian, any further questions before we ask Brian, ask Bernard about the best way to get into Rio?
I think it's Sao Paulo, by the way. But I think the question is, you know, can this drug get incorporated into immune combos? Or is it just too late? You know, did it come along too late? Because it would be a great partner, you know, like Axi was a great partner, et cetera. And I know you've done the Tinivo study from that combination. So maybe your opinion about its future as a partner in IO-based combos.
So it's an easy drug to combine. I mean, we combine it with Nivo, with good data, and very comparable to what we have with Pembro Axi in phase one. So it's very similar activities. Safety is good. So it's one of the combination we can use. Might be combinable with Nivo EP as an example.
Mm-hmm.
The question now is to convince you have to launch phase two or phase three. That takes a lot of money. And in this environment, are they going to do that? I don't know. But that's certainly one good option to keep in mind.
I mean, it's not clear to me we currently need to go far beyond axitinib. We need to wait and see what the cabozantinib data shows. But I think that the point you made earlier, which I agree with, Bernard, is I think that axitinib and tivoznib probably have more similarities than differences. I quite like the personalized dosing with axitinib. So I'm quite comfortable with that. And so my issue is, do we need more drugs? And does the community need more drugs? You know, the doctor who's treating four or five renal cancer patients a year probably doesn't need five or six different drugs that all look similar to choose from. But I think it's a difficult discussion.
Probably not, but I guess I would just push back a little and say, you know, patients always want more active drugs, and patients who respond to Axi and patients who respond to TiVo are not going to be 100% identical, right? For reasons we probably don't understand. Right. I think that's probably true. So I don't think it's a bad thing to have more active drugs, even if an individual doc or an individual patient won't necessarily use them all.
Bernard, what's the most exciting study out there? What are you looking forward to most in kidney cancer in the future?
So today, I think one of the study I want to see is the Pembro-Lanva combination. I want to know whether Lanva, which seems to be an active drug, a little bit different mechanism of action, can be more active than Pembroaxi. So probably one of the drugs I want to see in combination. We are waiting for the final data from the Cabo-Nivo study. And moreover, I think the Nivo-EP-Cabo is probably one of the most exciting combination I want to see, because I hope that we can get a high complete remission rate and a very long OS, if it's feasible. So I'm waiting for the COSMIC study, which looks at this combination.
Bernard, that's been terrific. Listen, we need to get to Sao Paulo, apparently. we've got to go. We'll zoom to the airport really quickly. How do we get to Sao Paulo from Paris? I'm guessing they're direct flights, aren't they?
Okay, good. Come.
Okay, fantastic. We're up for it. Bernard, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate
it. Thanks, Bernard.
Okay, thank you, and see you soon, I hope.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Guys.
Both of you. Bye-bye.